And we'll begin with prayer. Father, we are thankful again for all the precious things you've done for us today already, and now ask for a very blessed evening in your word. I pray that you would teach us and show us your will, and do help us to walk in a way that is pleasing to you. Amen. I got one little piece of information for you guys that I know none of you believe, but I believe it. It has nothing to do with the sermon tonight. Does anybody believe that there is any other books besides the Bible that are inspired? Yeah, what's that?
I believe inspired.
Okay, I understand what you're saying there. He had inspiration from heaven to write it, but has not made it the inspired divine word that we read like the Bible. There is another book that is higher than that one. Nope. That one's got error in it. Strong's Concordance. It's just the Bible. I love it. It's been my second favorite book since I was 15 years old, and it's a good book. I don't go anywhere without it. Anyway, we are in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and we will begin reading where we left off last time with verse 8, and we'll read through the end of chapter 6. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, and he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them, and what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity, and it is an evil disease. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. For he cometh in with vanity, and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place? All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. For what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? For who knoweth what is good for man in this life, all the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? All right, when I choose a subject, sometimes I spend some time studying on a subject, get a sermon together, and after a couple of hours, I abandon it because I run into issues with the subject that I have unanswered questions I don't know what to do with. Things that maybe don't make sense, or I see that the subject is much deeper than I thought it was, and I don't have time to get to the bottom of it, so I just drop it and say, I don't know enough about that. But when we go through a book, I have to take things as they come. And I will say that there are a few verses in these two chapters that don't honestly make any sense to me. I'm not even sure what he's talking about. I'm not going to tell you what they mean. We're going to skip over them. I can't do anything with them. If anybody can say something about them, you're welcome to. Let's get the context of where we are. So basically, chapters 1, 2, and 3 of this book are talking about, it is the sermon of a man who spent many years of his life looking at life on the earth, trying to figure out what value there was in it. And his conclusion over and over and over again, as he looked at every facet of life, his conclusion was, there isn't anything worthwhile in it. There's no reason for us to be here. That was his basic conclusion, looking at life. He comes to a completely different conclusion by the time he's done, when he realizes that this life isn't what we're supposed to be living for, but rather we're supposed to fear God and keep His commandments, because that is the whole duty of man. He comes to that conclusion in the book. But right now, we haven't gotten there yet. So he spends the first three chapters looking at life in general. Then we went into chapter 4, where he's continuing the same subject, but looking at more our relationship towards other people in this world of vanity. And then as we get to chapter 5 and chapter 6, we are looking more at our relationship towards money in this world of vanity. And so he's now done with his generals for the first three chapters, and he goes on for a number of chapters now, looking at different specific things. And the basic idea of what we're looking at in everything in chapters 5 and 6 is money, goods, riches, increase. We already looked at verses 1 through 7 last week. More or less, the relationship that man has towards God with money. But now, we start with verse 8. He says, if thou seest the oppression of the poor, the violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they, that is, the oppressors. There is a God, who is higher than the oppressors, and there is a judgment day coming. So, if you see people being abused by somebody, don't get shocked by it. This is how man lives. Then verse 9, moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. Nobody has the right to limit anybody's access to what God created. Nobody has the right to oppress anybody for themselves. And when he says this verse, the prophet of the earth is for all, he uses one example of who the prophet of the earth is for, the king. But the prophet of the earth isn't just for the king, it's also for the king's subjects. Verse 8, the people who are being oppressed. Everybody has a right. Everybody has needs. Everybody has the same kind of needs. And we all together live off the things that the earth, by God, gives to us. Not everybody knows that. Some people would believe that. Yes, Ezra. Go ahead. Without it.
Without the things that grow in the dirt.
Right.
There's nobody's excluded from farming.
Right.
And that's where it all starts. In the highest of the
right. And this portion that we get from the field is basically what Solomon is going to continue on with for the rest of this chapter. How we deal with it, more or less. If we have a right relationship to it or a wrong relationship to it will depend on whether or not we as a person are happy or not. To a very, very large degree, our relationship to food has to do with how happy we are. Our relationship to food, or you could say money if you want to, which in our society is the same as food. because as a general rule, the bulk of the things that man does with his life is eat. And eat, clothe ourselves, shelter ourselves, that's the bulk of the things we do. If you stop to think about all the other things that we add to our lives, the biggest share of them all can be broken down to the necessities of life. Yes, we have a job. And yes, at that job we use many tools. And yes, at that job we have many big pieces of equipment. And yes, we have huge manufacturing plants that manufacture this tool that we use at that job so that we can get money so that we can eat. And everything, as you trace everything down, and Solomon says this later in this chapter, we just read it, as you trace everything down, the number one thing that we do with our lives is eat or sustain ourselves. There's a few other things that we do besides eating. So, this is the right relationship to the earth, is that we understand that the earth is here to serve us, and it as well as every other person on earth. Now, I'll get political just one time in my life here. If I was made the president of the United States, you guys can quote this if you want and put it on the internet and hold me to it someday when I am the president. If I was made the president of the United States and I had it in my power to do, I would make a national law that prevented government from having any control over food or land or medical, all things that sustain our lives. I would make a national law that government could not make rules regarding those things, their use, who can have them, how they can be sold, etc., etc. It was public property. Not public in the sense of all people owned them, but all people had equal rights to them. I would make a law that there could be no patents created on anything that was regarding health or food. I would make a law that all the patents that we have on seed were illegal. A lot of you probably don't know this because you're not into the health industry, and I hear all this stuff. But as a matter of fact, probably about a good huge percent. I'm not gonna put out a number, but let's just say a monster amount of all the food that you buy in the grocery store came from a source that was patented and it is owned. And if these people one day decided, say when the Antichrist came, for example, if these people one day decided that they were going to limit who could eat their food or who could grow or what they were going to do, this nation would starve to death in 3 weeks. We would starve to death. There is not enough privately owned food or privately owned seed that this nation could survive right now. Because very, very large corporations are out on a mission right now, have been doing it for years now, to patent every kind of seed that can be had. And they will, of course, make big claims. My seed grows, we'll hybrid this, and will my seed grows better than somebody else's. And so everybody's growing their seeds. And the varieties of seed that used to exist are disappearing. They're gone. Not only so, but our government somewhere, I don't know who came up with this, but somewhere it's my understanding that things that have existed forever and ever, like seed, for example, that have been passed down from Adam, whoever is the first to the patent office with it can own it. You don't have to create it. All you have to be is first there with it. And they are in there by the hordes patenting all seed. It's a very, very sad situation. I believe that this verse righteously excludes that from humanity. This verse tells us, I don't care if you did spend $12 billion developing something that can be used in major hospitals to save people's lives. It is now public. If it pertains to life on earth, it's public. And somebody will begin to argue. Well then, who is going to develop new things when they are not going to get paid for it? If you want to know a situation where we have spent more money, if you want to talk about a country on earth where we have spent more money on life than any other country in the history of the world, and have less sense in our heads and less success with the things that we are doing, it is the United States of America right now. What we are doing right now, I don't care what you want to say about it, it does not work because it is against God's word. The wealthy of our country who want to own things, it is against God's word. The profit of the earth is for all. It is to be shared by all. And when Jesus said, freely ye have received, freely give, there's a Bible principle we can apply right now to the things that God created and gave to Adam. We did not make the earth. We did not make things to grow out of it. We did not make the things that sustain life. And we cannot own them. They are for all. So, my one political speech in my lifetime wasn't very good, but it's the truth. So, verse 10. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. This is something that you young people don't all know. Almost nobody, when they begin life on earth, knows the fact that the things that they desire, when they get them, will not satisfy them. Almost nobody knows that. In fact, very, very, very many people do not know that by the time they die. Because in their mind, the reason they have not found happiness on earth is because they have not yet gotten the things that they desired. Now listen to this. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. This is how it works. When you are young, you dream of having money. And you think of all the grand things that money will do for a person. You think about the wealthy and the rich people and the things they own and the things they get to do. And you think that would be a good lifestyle. If I get a good job and get me a bunch of that money, I can live quite happy. So let's say that you happen to be one of the few people that is more successful and become rich. Well, what happens when you get some of that riches is that it takes you to new places. And one of the first things that you find out is that there is a whole lot more to be wanted than you knew about when you were a kid. There's dinners at restaurants that you can pay a month's wages for if you go back to what your dad earned when you were a kid. And the rich are eating those dinners. And there's things. There's just more things. There is stores that you didn't know existed because your parents never went into them. Your friends never went into them. Nobody in your town ever went into them. But people who have millions and millions of dollars in their accounts do go into them. And when you do go into those things, your eyes tell you that the things they are selling are needed to make you happy. And so here we go. I wanted silver. I got this silver. But this silver took me into a place, first of all, where I wanted more things. So I'm going to need more silver to get the more things. But it's also true that that silver that I got, when I first started wanting silver, let's say I was ignorant and I thought being a millionaire would be fun. But by the time I get to be a millionaire, I find out that there's millionaires everywhere, and $1 million just isn't worth that much. That was a small goal. And it's just, you know, all it would take is one bad thing to happen to me, and I could spend all that money. And that hasn't even touched a very wealthy retirement that I thought it was going to be good for. All of a sudden, a pile of silver in a bucket in your basement, or however you want to store it, just doesn't have any charm anymore. But the other buckets of silver you haven't gotten yet are still calling. And they will call until you go get them. And when there's a row of 5 pails of silver in your basement, those 5 pails of silver don't have any charm anymore. But there's still buckets of silver out there that are calling, and those buckets are more charming. And on and on and on and on and on it leads you till the day that you die, you believe that you never attained the thing that you were really looking for, when in fact you really did attain what you were looking for at the beginning, but it didn't make you happy. And when you got to the point that you got what you were looking for and it didn't make you happy, you didn't wake up and say, I was chasing something that wasn't any good. You continued the chase. You know why we continue the chase? There is 2 voices calling to us on this earth. There is God calling us to righteousness. And there's the devil calling us to pleasure. And God's voice to righteousness leads us through a path of self-denial. And the devil's voice to pleasure leads us to a path of self-pleasing. And almost everybody on earth chooses to follow the devil's voice. And he is standing at your side when you've got that pail, telling you, Forget about it. There's more. Keep going. Keep going. Happiness is just ahead. So he that loveth abundance isn't going to be satisfied with increase either. Now Solomon, looking at these things, seriously considering the fact now of whether or not these things can satisfy us or not, when he looks at this and figures out that they can't, he just says it plainly, this is also vanity. This is also empty. There's nothing there. But there is something there. He comes up with one good conclusion about the matter in verse 11. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. Now, I'm pretty sure that Jason could probably come up here and give us a sermon on this verse. We don't really need him tonight because I can give you one too. And if there's anybody else who used to be small in business and now is bigger, can probably tell you pretty much the same thing. I used to make more money. Now, it's not the case because there was a time in the history of Golden Harvest, let me think now. The beginning, the first 2 years that Golden Harvest was in business, we made as much money, I believe, in 3 months as we now make in a day. Okay. Now, let me tell you the difference between 3 months versus 1 day. Back then, when we made enough money, when it took us 3 months to make the same amount of money we now take in 1 day, back then I ate. You never saw me walking around skinny and starved. Back then I lived in a house. Back then I had a girlfriend. Now those three things are pretty important to me. Now, fast forward 18 years. I eat, I live in a house, I have a girlfriend. What has changed in my life?
Got married.
Okay, that was good. I don't think the money had anything to do with it. What has changed? Now, it is true that for those first couple of years, we struggled pretty hard. There wasn't much money, and we were pretty frugal with the house we lived in and with the food we ate and stuff. And now we don't have to be quite as careful. We can spend a little bit more money. But as a matter of fact, I'll tell you right now, I'm just as happy. I'd be just as happy to go back to that trailer house if I didn't have too much stuff to fit in it. That's the problem. I got too much stuff now. Now, too much stuff, what kind of stuff? And this is something very important for you guys to understand. Otto Koning says, sell the big house. Move into a little one. I agree with Otto Koning 100% unless in this one thing. If the reason that you want a big house is to fear God and keep His commandments, then go do His work. You see, there are some people who get in this small-minded kind of ideal. If all you need is an 8-foot by 40-foot trailer, if that's all you need, you can be just as happy there as if you lived in the White House. However, sometimes that's more than you need. And I can tell you right now, I am not moving into an 8x40 trailer with my 6 kids unless God makes me. Because I wouldn't be very happy there. Now, God didn't tell you had to raise 6 kids in an 8x40 trailer, okay? He didn't say that. It's a little bit small. We're not going to be unreasonable here. We want the size of a house, we want the size of a vehicle, we want the size of a business, we want the size of clothes, whatever it is. We want the size that works for us. Okay? If you're 400 pounds, you can't fit in my clothes. Now, we are not going to find more happiness in bigger things, okay? We're not going to find more happiness in it. But we are going to find more usefulness in it. We're going to find more usefulness in bigger things if we are using them to honor God. So that is still a reason why sometimes we pursue things. Why sometimes we want to make more money. Why sometimes we should want to buy bigger things. There is a reason to buy bigger things sometimes. But not for happiness. So, Solomon writes, when goods increase, they are increased that eat them. Now, I don't know if you guys ever stop to think about the fact, when you read about the rich people in the Bible, you can read about Abraham, for example, and the Bible will tell you he had this many cattle and this many sheep and it'll list the things that he owned. And you read through that list and you go, wow, big guy. But when it comes time to go to war and chase after somebody who stole your brother-in-law, you find that he also had over 300 men of war in his household. Now, all of a sudden, start dividing this farm stuff out between 300 men plus a whole pile of women and children that it didn't say anything about. And all of a sudden, his riches weren't as great as they might have looked. You read the same thing in Job. It tells you all about all the things that he owned. And when the devil came along and sent all these people, or whatever it was, to destroy all of Job's stuff, it always tells you when the servant comes back to tell Job what happened, he says, I'm the only one that escaped. There was another whole crowd of people that got hit. Now I'm not going to say that Abraham and Job weren't rich. Okay, but it is true. Let me just tell you from my own personal experience. I've been 18 years running a business that we never ended a year. We never ended a year in 18 years where I had money invested in stocks. We never ended a year in 18 years that I had money in a bank account. As far as like extra, like sitting there saying, what am I going to do next with this? We have never ended a year where there was something sitting around that we didn't know what to do with. In fact, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I am almost certain, if I remember correctly, that there has never been a year in 18 years that we have not ended the year with the checkbook reading red instead of black. It's the way we go. Now, if you go back, as I said, 18 years ago, it was one full-time person at the store. I helped out when I wasn't working my job, and two of my sisters worked very part-time. That was all there was. Part-time help of the sisters got paid. Alicia, who owned the store with me, did not get paid from the store. She got paid from me because I was working construction, so we split my check. So that's how we lived for the first couple of years. But after the first couple of years, when I took over the store and she left it and I took over the whole thing, from that time on, the money that I have lived on in my life has come from the store. Now back then, I took enough out to pay my bills, which were very small. Now, we go on year after year after year after year, increase sales, increase employees, increase sales, increase employees, increase sales, increase employees. Until here we are, 18 years later, with a business that everybody who ever talks anything about it wishes they could be the person to own something like that. And I can tell you right now, I work enough hours to work two jobs. And if I were to go anywhere in town and get two jobs, I would make more money, probably close to double what I make right now. Because, well, you say, well, you're just a bad manager. Okay, fine, now I'm a bad manager. I think it's because I have bad employees. But okay, let's just say I'm a bad manager. But you know what? The funny thing of it is I have the Bible here that tells me when goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And all these people that work for me, they take the profit from the extra sales. Is that right or wrong? You know, this is just the way life works. I can tell you, as a matter of fact, I follow Walmart a little bit. I'm always hunting the news for anything bad about them. I follow Walmart just a little bit, see what's going on with them. And I know just a couple of years ago, they made some major changes in their business structure because they were going down. They have risen today to be the number one business in the world as far as sales go. They have got the market. And there was at least 1 year, if there was not two, that they lost a ton of money. Why? Wouldn't you be nearly untouchable if you got that big? When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. That's all we need to worry about. They are increased that eat them. Now, as a matter of fact, Walmart's on the way out. They have made their money. The people who own it and have anything to say about it are too wealthy now. They can't possibly care enough about a business who is struggling to try to be like them. They're on the way down. You can put that out as a prophecy if you want to, but it's not a prophecy from God. It's just my own personal opinion. I think it's right. Give them 50 years, they're going to be a struggling place like Kmart. They've had their day. There's other people who want their day. Isn't that odd? Why do we all want that day when it doesn't provide us the happiness that we're looking for? Well, here's the one thing that it does provide us in the latter half of verse 11. It says, what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? I'll tell you, that's something that has a very, very small value. Because when I go to work right now and I drive into my place of business and I get to look at it, it does feel just a little bit better than when I used to go to work and walk over to Coon Street and look at that building, because it was pretty ugly. Now, that does not provide me a whole lot of happiness, but it's just a tiny little smidgen. So, I'm not saying, now let me tell you something. The fact that Solomon is writing about this does not mean that we should all have small businesses. It does not mean that we should try and be a one-man operation. All he is telling us here is there's no value in it as far as happiness goes. As far as if you're going to do something for yourself that's going to make your life having been worth lived, there's nothing in it. It's just vanity. However, there are some things that we can do with the things that God has given us that do have eternal values. And those are always worth doing. So, he says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. When you have worked hard all day, if you have a good supper or a meager supper, you go to bed and you sleep well. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. When you go to bed at night, you worry about your stuff. Now, this is one thing I thank God for this, and if I can give any testimony to the value of being a Christian tonight, I will do it. I have never stayed awake for 1 minute at night worrying about anything that I own. Because in my personal opinion, I don't own any of it anyway. Everything that I touch with my fingers, everything that anyone will call mine, is God's, and it has been since I was 15 years old. I don't want anything. I have the whole town worrying for me about my stuff. My employees come to me on a non-stop basis telling me that I should have surveillance cameras in the store. And I tell them I don't really think it's worth it. Well, I did get a quote one time. The guy really badly wanted to give me a quote. And he quoted me a really cool system. If Noah had been my store manager, we would have gotten it. Because it was cool. You can go back into the office and pull up any transaction on the register that you want to and click on the video, and it will show you on the screen the video of that transaction. It was a good system. It was $50,000. And I said, you know, it's taken me 18 years to lose way less than $50,000. Why should I lose it intentionally on the video system? What value is that for? Well, you know what it's for? It's for peace of mind, and you know what's going on. Except then you gotta sit and watch it. You know, what good is the video system if you don't watch it? Yes, Noah.
Hire another guy.
I have customers telling me all the time, worrying about whether I take stuff inside at night. Don't people steal it? I've lost a couple of things here and there. But I tell them the same thing. I said a fence or carrying stuff inside every night would cost me way more than the amount of stuff that I've lost through theft. So it's a matter of, should I intentionally lose money to build the fence? Or should I just let some money unintentionally go that's going to be a far lesser amount? But you see, the thing of it is, if that was my stuff, I might worry about it. Because if this was life, if this was all there was to life, and I was going to get what I was going to get, and it was my happiness, it was my God, it was what I was going to have, and if I lost it, I was going to lose my life because it was my life. If that's how it was, then I could worry about it. But right now, it's God's. If he doesn't want me to have it, he can have it any day he wants it. And you know, when somebody sneaks in there at night and steals something and goes off with it and I don't get to watch it happen, God saw it. He knows who it was. He knows their name and he knows where they took it. And I have no idea what he does with his property after it leaves my hands. But I do know one thing for certain. He's got it under control. So, the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. It's a good reason not to be rich. Verse 13, there is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. We are not in charge of the fact, even if we do lay awake worrying about our stuff at night, or even if we do wander our property protecting our stuff at night, we are not in charge of whether or not we keep or lose the things that we have. And Solomon watched this as he saw people in his lifetime. He watched people with great riches that ended up hurting them. And he watched people with great riches who lost them. And he watched those people young enough to have gained riches and lost them and still be having children and have nothing to take care of their kids with. Let me tell you something, guys. There's a whole bunch of people living in this country right now who believes that you are irresponsible if you don't have a certain amount of stuff in place to take care of yourself and your family. And it does not matter how sensible you are, how wealthy you are, or how protected you are. You can still lose it. Our hope for living is not in the things that we can get or in the security that we can make. Our hope for living is that even if we have nothing, God is still our Father. That's our hope. So these same people who lose everything, he says in verse 15, as he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. That is the truth. And that is the truth for the poor. It is the truth for the rich. It's the truth for the boys, for the girls, for the Americans, for the Chinese. It's the truth. You come into this world with nothing. And you work, and you work, and you work, and you work, and you sweat. And you stay away from the parties so that you can get ahead. You work harder, you work extra hours so you can get more. And you spend your entire life that way. And there's coming a day that every single person who's ever been born had to go through where they die. And every single thing that they worked for their entire life is lost in one moment. They don't take anything with them. And so he says in verse 16, and this also is a sore evil. Then all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? What value did you get out of the fact that you spent your life working when you couldn't keep it? Now we are told in the New Testament that those who build with gold and silver and precious stones, when we die, we get to keep that work. But those who build with wood, hay, and stubble, their work is going to be burned. And when you go through the scriptures and look at that passage in the light of Ecclesiastes and other things that God says, it is very, very clear that gold, silver, and precious stones in that passage are things that are eternal. They are not the food we eat, the houses we live in, the clothes we wear, the cars we drive, but they are the souls of men and the Word of God and the building of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. The things that will not end, the things that are eternal, those are the things. Now it is true, though, that we do use the non-eternal things of this earth to secure the things that are eternal. Jesus talked about that in one of his parables when he told the story about the unjust steward and how he spent his Lord's goods so that when he was put out of stewardship, he had friends. And he told us to do the same thing. Now that is our Lord's stuff is the stuff that God has given to us, and we only own things that are from this earth. We don't own eternal things. We own earthly things. That's God's stuff that he's given to us. And he says that we are to spend that, his goods. We're to spend his goods so that when we fail, we can be received into heaven. That sounds like work salvation to me. You know, As a matter of fact, we don't believe in works salvation. We believe in salvation by faith. But when you read through the scriptures, there's a whole lot of things in there about work. We need to pay close attention that we do not get one-sided on that subject. That we understand correctly that while we cannot earn salvation by spending God's money rightly, yet it is something that is a piece of our salvation that God has given us to, and God says, work it out with fear and trembling. If you don't do that, you'll probably be found to not have the salvation that you are seeking. So, verse 17, talking still about the rich here, all his days, also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Now, not everybody goes through this, as we'll learn in the next few verses. But some people, some rich people, who one time were wealthy and lost everything they had, end up living a very painful, sorrowful life because their riches weren't worth anything, didn't do them any good. So he goes on then, verse 18, says, behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Now we are back to the beginning where he says the profit of the earth is for all. This is what we have been given by God as a gift. We have been given by God as a gift the profit of the earth. And our response to that is not that we love it, not that we hoard it, not that we work hard to get extra of it, but that we use it for the purposes for which it was made. That is where we will find any happiness at all. It's the only place that we will find any happiness at all in this life, is that we take the things that God made and use them for the purposes He made them. So we will find joy in eating and drinking. We can enjoy the good of our labor. We do not enjoy it by tearing down our barns and building greater and storing it. That does not provide us happiness. But going inside the house and cooking that which we worked for, and sitting down with our wives and our brats or whatever they are, that we can have a good time doing. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. You see, there are also a few people on earth that God has given riches to. Abraham, Job, so on. There have been some people that God has given riches to and he gave them the ability to enjoy it. But I can tell you one thing, in every one of those cases that was true, any man who had riches and enjoyed his life understood where his riches came from, understood that there was nothing to be banked on in them, understood whose they were. And like Job and Abraham, both, one of the traits that we see in their character was that they held those things for other people. All Abraham had to do was see somebody walking past, and he was out the door of his tent saying, let me make you a meal. And he fed those men an entire calf, as well as many other things. That was generous. So the last verse, For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. You know, there are people on earth that spend their lives looking to earth to provide them happiness, but everything they do is wrong. I know a business person who, I'm kind of going over right now, but this is kind of a funny situation, because there's a guy I know who runs a business that in some ways could be similar to mine. Known him for a lot of years now. Lots of other people I know and work with know him also. And he's our joke. When we want to talk about somebody who's crazy, we talk about him. He is the biggest pinch penny you've ever met in your life. I do not know how he ever accomplished building a big business, being as pinch penny as he is. And he has spent much time in trying to position himself in a place where everybody in Wisconsin who has bulk food stores has to order stuff through him. He has called companies up, and I don't know why he tells me this. He should keep it a secret. But he has called companies up that many people deal with, and he has asked them if they would allow him to be the sales rep for Wisconsin, and everybody has to order stuff through him. And just nonsensical, stupid stuff. I mean, I understand if that works. I understand if you're a distributor and you're buying in truckloads of stuff and selling it by the pallet. It makes sense. Okay, but if it's stuff that's coming UPS to your door, sorry, guy, we don't need you. You can go home and run your own store. He's got money. I do not know how he makes money. I have no clue how he makes money. He'd been running a store for about 14 years out of a place about the size of my office and was very successful. When he decided it was time to build a new store, and it had been for a long time, he went up and put up a building about 15,000 square feet, almost the size of my store, and paid cash for the whole thing. And it wasn't only he paid cash for the whole thing, but within a year, he's lending money out to people because he doesn't know what to do with it, and he's earning interest. And in fact, he's almost offered to lend money to me, but I don't work with scoundrels. You know, he has the longest, most sour face you've ever seen. And you know what? He does not have a single happy employee in his business. I do not know how he retains customers, because they are the most unfriendly set of girls you've ever met. And they all talk about how horrible he is to work for. Now this is not what we're talking about. This is somebody who's pursuing the things of life that still thinks there's some value in them. Give up the things of life. If you lose them, you should be as happy on that day as the day you gained them. Give up the things of life. Let God be your source. If you can get it in your head that the things that you have, it doesn't matter if you have them or don't have them. And if God wants them, He can have them. It will make you happy, because I can tell you one thing. Every person here will face this. There's always things going wrong in your life. Always. Something's going to break. Somebody's going to mess something up. Somebody is going to damage something. Somebody's going to hurt you. If that thing didn't matter to you, then, well, okay, sometimes it's the right thing to do to fire a person who can't take proper care of things. That is true. But if that thing doesn't matter to you on that day, you can still have a happy day. If that thing matters to you, now it's not just a matter of if this employee is worth keeping or not. Now it's a matter of, we're also going to have a sad day. My face is hard. My people are going to be unhappy. Of course, this bears evil fruit. These are the kind of situations where your wife leaves you over, or your kids get bitter and turn to drugs, or the list can go on and on and on and on and on. It doesn't pay. It doesn't pay to put your faith in vanity. It doesn't pay to love it. It's here to use. And because we're humans, it's here to lose. Sometimes God takes it from us without us doing anything, and sometimes we take it from ourselves by acts of foolishness. But it's here to lose. And so what it's here for, in reality, is just to get a little bit of pleasure for the day out of, just so we can eat. That's all. We're just working so we can eat. We don't need anything else. If we can keep that view of this life, it will make it so much easier for us to be a sweet person. It'll make us so much easier to have friends, to influence people, to just be happy and nice. And actually, in some ways, it's also the path to gain more. Though that should not be our chief aim. And I was thinking that I was going to get through both of these chapters because we really continue the same subject as we go on into the next chapter, but we're running late already. And so we'll probably just spend a few minutes on the next chapter next time before we move on, because it's really going to just cover a lot more of the ground over again. But for now, we will dismiss.